from KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Sockeye Run in Bristol Bay dropped off suddenly over the weekend, and some fishermen there are looking forward to fishing the silvers. There is plenty of salmon news from Southeast, and Alaska's largest commercial fishing port finally is getting wireless internet coverage. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The sockeye salmon run in the Nooshiegak dropped off suddenly last weekend, and so far it has not rebounded. It's resulted in airplanes full of captains, crews, processors, and others going home. However, some fishermen are apparently looking forward to some late-season fishing. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story on what to expect in the Nooshiegak District.
With the drop-off in the sockeye run, many area fishermen are hoping there will be a chance to catch some silvers in the late season. Tim Sands is the ADF&G Area Management Biologist for the Nooshiegak Commercial Fishing District. He says he's been taking a lot of questions.
What I'm telling people is obviously there's no pink run this year. We'll evaluate things when we start seeing a big uptick in the silver catch. We'll probably shut things down for a few days and see where we're at, and then we might provide some opportunity. We'll just see. I guess at this point I'm thinking maybe a couple 8-hour days a week, but we'll just make it up as we go along once we get closer to that point.
Sands confirms that the Nooshiegak District is managed differently than other districts in Bristol Bay in that it does not automatically go onto a weekly fishing schedule later this month.
The other districts, I think they're Monday 9 a.m. to Friday 9 a.m. And, you know, if we had the effort that we had last year, then I think that's too much fishing time for this district. You know, we have a very good coho run in some years on Nooshiegak, and it can be overfished, I think, and so we have to guard against that. I don't think the other districts get as much effort because they don't have as big of a run.
There's no forecast for the coho salmon run to the Nooshiegak River, but the 2011 Bristol Bay Salmon Outlook notes that the 2007 parent year was notably weak. The Outlook points out that the Department of Fish and Game will switch to coho management somewhere around July 23rd. That same outlook notes that Fish and Game will use subsistence information, aerial surveys, and sport and commercial harvest information to determine what amount of fishing time is warranted. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
After taking more chum salmon than usual in the Bering Sea, the pollock cooperatives agreed to put their rolling hotspot program into gear and shut down some fishing grounds with high bycatch. That seemed to work for a while, but now bycatch has gone up again, and the pollock fleet faces more closures. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
The pollock fleet is allowing more fishing grounds in the Bering Sea to be closed in an effort to reduce the high levels of chum salmon bycatch. On Monday, representatives from the pollock cooperatives agreed to expand the salmon bycatch avoidance zone by another 1,000 square nautical miles. That brings the total area that can be closed at any given time to 5,000 square miles. So far, the fleet has taken an unusually high number of chums this bee season. As of this week, it had taken approximately 53,000 chum salmon. Last year, only 13,000 chums were taken over the course of the whole season. Most of the bycatch this season was taken during the first 2 weeks, before the fleet started making targeted closures based on where salmon was being caught, a system known as the Rolling Hotspot Program.
If we'd allow the whole fleet to fish in this area all the time, you know, in other words, if there were no Rolling Hotspot Program, we'd be in the hundreds of thousands of chum salmon by now, which would really be well ahead of any pace we'd ever been on before.
That's John Groover, the inter-co-op manager with United Catcher Boats. Because chum and pollock often go after the same food sources, they usually mingle in the same waters, which is bad for fishermen.
The most productive area with the most valuable pollock happened to be right inside these rolling hotspot closures that are just north of Unimac Pass. So what we're doing is shutting everybody out of the best pollock grounds, which is about the 3,000 to 4,000 square miles we're talking about, and moving them off into other areas where there is some bycatch still, but and also much slower pollock fishing.
That means that boats are having to travel farther out and spend more money on fuel.
Anytime you make a boat move or run further, their costs are going to go up.
But still, the big priority for the fleet right now is reducing bycatch numbers and helping ensure that runs in Western Alaska are strong. Joe Garney lives in the village of Teller. He testified on the chum bycatch issue at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's June meeting in Nome. He worries that high levels of chum bycatch mean that the salmon won't make it up to subsistence users like him. While he used to be able to catch over 100 chum salmon a day during the summer months, now he's only bringing in about 60 on average and having to use a bigger net.
You know, we're a community that's living below U.S. poverty standards. We're an impoverished community. And you take our kings, they're extinct. You take our reds, they're diminished down to no nothing. The only thing we got left is some just, it's painting a very grim picture.
But Groover says that when chum bycatch is plentiful and hard for the fleet to avoid, that usually means strong runs later in the season. So far this year, salmon runs in the Norden Sound and Yukon-Kuskokwim regions have been at pace, and 3 million chums have been harvested statewide. And more importantly, he adds that it's not clear that the bycatch that the pollock fleet is taking is necessarily heading toward western Alaska.
A lot of the fish are not western Alaska fish at all. In our high years, they're Asian and Russian hatchery fish.
He says that down the road, genetic analysis of these fish could help reduce bycatch of western Alaska chums, especially if that approach is used in conjunction with the rolling hotspot program and gear like salmon excluder devices. But in the meantime, the pollock fleet is hoping that cautious fishing will be enough. In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Southeast Commercial Troll Fleet finished up their first summer king salmon opening just before midnight on Tuesday. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game expected the trollers to reach the target harvest of nearly 102,000 Chinook by the end of the day. The opening started on July 1st. Trollers will head back out to fish for other salmon after offloading any kings caught in the opening. They'll have another king opening sometime in August after a closure designed to let coho salmon return to the inside waters.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
A hatchery run of chum salmon that has produced big early season catches for Southeast Commercial Purse Seine Fleet is just a fraction of its former self this year. Chum returns to the Hidden Falls hatchery on eastern Baranoff Island this summer have been low, so low that seiners will not likely be fishing for those chums again this year, and hatchery managers are concerned about getting enough fish back to keep the run going. Hidden Falls is run by the Sitka-based Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, or NSARA. General Manager Steve Reifenstuhl says he's feeling a little better about the run after a survey of the waters around the hatchery last week.
I am not calling it a disaster at this point. As defined, we wouldn't be able to get broodstock. It's kind of a run failure, as I put it in that category. So far, we have 90,000 fish harvested, 70,000 to the same fleet, and 20,000 to cost recovery. And once we saw how weak it was 10 days ago, then we stopped all fishing, both commercial and cost recovery, and became concerned just about the future of the program and protecting what was left for broodstock.
NSARA was forecasting a total run of around 1.1 million chum this summer. Reifenstuhl says he won't restart cost recovery fishing, which helps fund hatchery operations, until the hatchery secures 140,000 chums needed to produce the future generation of fish. He says he hopes to catch half of that broodstock this week, but is looking at alternatives if the hatchery cannot reach its broodstock goal. The Seine fleet had three openings in June around Hidden Falls, but Fish and Game early this month alerted the fleet not to expect additional openings without a big jump in the returns. Reifenstuhl blames the low return on humpback whales eating the juvenile chums when they're released into Chatham Strait. He says the hatchery in recent years has changed the way it releases the small salmon to make it harder for the whales to gobble them up on their way out to the ocean. Overall, he says he's disappointed.
Disappointment when the return doesn't come in as you had forecast. You know, Hidden Falls used to be the shining star in the mid-90s and early 2000 with, you know, runs of 3.5 million, 2.5 million. And we haven't seen those kind of returns in almost 10 years now. And it's a disappointment to me and a disappointment to the fleet.
Reifenstuhl says it seems like an isolated problem with the Hidden Falls chums. Hatchery returns elsewhere in Southeast are not encountering similar low numbers. The Hidden Falls chum run typically peaks around July 10th. No one was injured when a 58-foot fishing vessel caught fire Monday morning after grounding at Bostwick Point, about 8 miles south of Ketchikan. The Coast Guard Command Center in Juneau received a report at 11:55 Sunday night from the crew of the fishing vessel Legend, saying they had run aground at Bostwick Point on Gravina Island. The crew also reported using their Sane skiff to depart the vessel, and that all five crew members were safely aboard the 54-foot Good Samaritan fishing vessel Western Roamer. The Legend's crew was later transferred to the 54-foot Julie Ann and transported safely to Ketchikan early Monday morning. Prior to departing the scene, though, the crew of the Julie Ann reported to the Coast Guard that the Legend had caught fire. All three fishing vessels involved are homeported in Ketchikan. Kodiak's harbors are finally going to receive wireless internet this summer, but the price is not sitting well with some fishermen. Under contract with the city, Coastline Computers of Alaska is installing the system at the two harbors and both ferry docks. Owner Eric Romero says there will be several levels of service, from yearly contracts to paying per day.
If you go for the month, I believe we had it at $89 a month if you did a whole year with us, if you subscribe for a whole year. Otherwise, it's $99 a month if you just do it by the month. And then it's going to be $15 a day.
That's outrageous. $90 a month for wireless internet. That's outrageous.
That's Bill Harrington, a Kodiak fisherman who's long pushed for wireless internet in the harbors.
And I got to talk to my other guy and tell him this. Hey, Ryan, they're going to install wireless internet now. You know how much they want a month for? $90.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know it doesn't make any sense. So now there's two of us outraged that they're not going to pay $90 a month for internet service.
Harrington's crew member Ryan Horwath also said he'll be looking for other options instead.
There is other options, and for me, I could actually have internet put back on my boat, put an antenna on my boat for $200, and split a $90 bill a month with three or four other guys, and we'd have fast internet. So why would I buy it from this guy? You know, ACS offers phone lines in the harbor, actually.
But Romero says the price is actually pretty fair when you consider the equipment and bandwidth it takes to install.
The bandwidth is very large, and you're talking about, you know, how many thousands of boats come through this harbor, and if people are going to use that bandwidth, you got to make sure you have plenty for all the boats. If we were on, you know, in Anchorage or any island that, or any land that you could actually get bandwidth for cheaper, I mean, you know, that's why they can get them cheaper at other harbors. The bandwidth out here, look at your, you know, GCI itself is, you know, look at the pricing on that. We're only $10 a month over them, you know, and that's to have wireless at the harbor. I don't, for all the hardware we're putting in, I think it's pretty fairly priced, actually.
Romero says he's confident the price will go down in the future. His company is not paying an access fee to the city by agreeing to install security cameras and provide the bandwidth to operate those. Phase 1 of the rollout will bring internet service to St. Paul Harbor. Phase 2 will extend that service to St. Herman Harbor on Near Island and to both piers where the Alaska State Ferries Tustamina and Kennecott tie up. That's expected to be done sometime in September.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org. And by
the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham, KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, KFSK's Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, KRBD's Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, and KMXT's Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.